We'll be wrapping up the book of Judges here next couple of weeks. It's been an interesting study, hasn't it? Revealing study. One of those studies that leaves you feeling much like, you know, you have so much to learn and you've got so much to go through yet. And even though we've all been through things and some hardship and all the rest, and we've grown in the spiritual knowledge of the Word, but yet we realize, don't we, that so many of these characters and so much of the things that we're seeing in this particular study, they all really point to how we live so often. And it's sad in one respect, but on the other hand, it's a great encouragement to know that God didn't give up on some of those people that we would have probably gave up long ago. And, you know, we've often said it's a good thing that none of us are God, because none of us would be here. If any one of us was God, everybody else would be gone. Because we don't have the patience and we don't have the long-suffering and love and tenderness and gentleness and all those things. He is just so gracious. When I read the book of Judges, I'm just amazed again at how patient God is, how loving He is, how kind, how gentle He is. We left off last week finishing up with chapter 17. And we looked at that Sunday, but last week we went through chapter 16. And then Sunday, if you were here, we looked at chapter 17, which was about Micah, this man who the story starts off, if you recall. He tells his mom that the money she's missing is, you know, in his possession. She's missing 1,100 shekels of silver, and he's got it. And then as soon as he reveals that he's stolen her money, she says, "Oh, blessed be thou of God, my son." You know, crazy. And then, of course, the family gets into making molten images and graven images out of that silver. And the family's just confused and confounded. And as we've looked at and as we've talked about, this last section of Judges is a picture of what was going on during the times of the Judges. So this is not, you know, a chronological, you know, end to the rest of the stories. It's going on while the stories are going on that we've covered. So during the times of Jephthah and the times of Gideon and the times of Samson, this is the condition that the people were in. This is the way the world was in that particular time, during the time when there was no king in Israel and every man did that which was right in his own sight. And boy, is this ever a picture of what's going on today in our society. People are doing what's right in their own sight. And, you know, when you look at people and you think, boy, what's wrong with that person or those people or that group or whatever? How can they do those things? How can they act that way or be a part of that? Well, they're doing what's right in their own sight. They don't really care what God's word says. And this is the condition that the people were in during the times of the judges. So keep that in mind as we go through chapter 18 tonight, that this is in the midst of all those other things that we've covered. This is the way it was. And that's why the people needed the judges, the deliverers, those that would deliver them from themselves, really. Isn't that the way it works? Didn't the Lord deliver you, really, from you? He did me. I mean, I needed deliverance from me because I was doing what was right in my own sight. I did what was right in my own thoughts, you see, previously. And that was something that was making a huge impact on others. I was ruining not only my life, but I was ruining other people's lives. And the Lord had to save me from me. He had to deliver me from myself because I would have destroyed myself. I was so steeped in drugs and alcohol and everything else, I was just headed down, you know, to the pit. And that's where I would have wound up. Because that's what people end up doing to themselves without a God in their life that's the true and living God. And as we're going to see here, there's the story of Micah continues. Now, Micah, if you recall, the guy made his own God. He made his own worship, and he made his own priest. He had his own thing going on. And if you recall, at the end of the story, Micah made the Levite that came to his house, this hired priest, you know, if you would, this guy that would be anybody's priest as long as he had money. And he was Micah's priest, amazingly. And Micah said, hey, now God will surely bless me because I've got a Levite for my priest. In other words, I've got a house of gods, and I've got molten images and graven images, and now I even have a Levite priest. So certainly now God's going to do some good in my life. How crazy is that? And yet, how many people are doing this, folks? They set up these little things in their life, don't they? Perhaps you've done this. Maybe you still do it a little bit. In other words, I set up these little things in my life and say, well, certainly now God will bless me because I have this little thing in order and I have that little thing in order. And you make these little things that you place importance upon, you make them things that you think God should bless you for. And really, the reality is what really should God bless you for? I mean, how many of us have done something to earn God's blessing? I mean, how many things have you done today to earn his blessing rather than earn his condemnation? Most of us have earned condemnation much more than we've earned blessing, haven't we? But the crazy thing with Micah's story was that he set up all these ungodly things and then expected God to bless him for him. In other words, I'll just set this up and it'll be right in God's sight, even though he knew, he had to have known, didn't he, that it wouldn't have been right in God's sight to have gods in his house, to have a house of gods, rooms full of gods, and then to take a priest, a Levite priest, and make him his own. And we talked about this Levite. He wasn't supposed to be there. He should have been in one of the cities that the Levites were assigned to. But he was looking for a better position. And we talked about that on Sunday. The hired hands of ministry. They're for hire. And they'll say just about anything you want them to say as long as you pay them enough money to do so. And we pick up the story in verse 1 because it continues on. In those days, verse 1, there was no king in Israel. God should have been king, but for these people, there was no God. There's no king for them. They didn't have a king in Israel. God should have been, but he wasn't. And in those days, the tribe of the Danites sought them an inheritance to dwell in. For unto that day, all their inheritance had not fallen unto them among the tribes of Israel. Now, the Danites are brought into this picture. In those days, there was no king, and the Danites, the tribe of Dan, they were seeking, it says, they sought there them an inheritance. Well, wait a minute. Didn't they get an inheritance? Sure they did. The tribes got their inheritance. They were handed their inheritance, or like the other tribes were told, go get it. But if you read the story, you'll find out that the tribe of Dan didn't get their inheritance because they didn't take it. Remember, over and over again, as we read through the end of the book of Joshua, and they could not drive them out, it says, about the inhabitants, the Canaanites. All these tribes were trying to drive them out, but they failed, didn't they? Because they didn't have faith. The Danites couldn't take their territory that they were given as an inheritance. So do you know what they're doing? They're looking for something else. They're seeking something else, some other portion, some other place, some other inheritance that they might grab, that they might take. And the reason that they're doing this is because they didn't take what was supposed to be given to them and that they were supposed to inhabit. This is going on a lot today. People want what everybody else have. And in the spiritual context, this happens too, doesn't it? People want oftentimes what somebody else has, even in a spiritual sense. And here's the thing, guys. The Danites were given a portion of land. God had placed each tribe, didn't he, exactly where he wanted them? Didn't God give them exactly what he wanted them to have? Of course he did. And they should have stayed where they were, you see, and taken what God had given them. But they didn't do that. And so here they are now looking for something else. And this is a condition I find in people over and over again. And that is this. God's given you something. But because you fail to obey and do what he's saying to do, then what happens is you go looking for something else. In other words, well, I know what the Lord said there, and I know what he says here, and I know that he means that in this particular circumstance, but that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. So I'm going to go over here now, or I'm going to do this now. And how many people have woven this web of trouble because they moved from where God told them to be, and now they're trying to find something else to make their fulfillment, you see. And yet they should have stayed put and just obeyed. Does disobedience, in other words, when God says, obey me here, do this, here's what I want you to have, here's where I want you to go, does that really ever change? I mean, in other words, if God says, obey this now, does he change his mind later and say, oh, well, you don't have to obey now? I find that I've had to go back miles spiritually and pick up where I left off. Because I obeyed one time this way and one time that way. Then I spent a whole season in disobedience and then tried to find another way. And the Lord brought me right back to this one spot. This one issue, here it is, here's the spot you left off, start obeying here and move on. And sometimes you have to backtrack to do that because you've gotten so far afield that sometimes you have to stop and say, where was I? Where was I when I quit obeying the Lord and go back? Well, the Danites are in that place. So they're seeking out some other place. And they sought out a better place because they didn't take what the Lord gave them. And sometimes that's the condition that we're in, you see. And the reason that they're going to leave where they're at and go look for something else is because their heart is full of covetousness, as we'll see. When I don't take what God gives me and I'm content with it, if I go looking for something more or something else, the only reason I would do that is because I'm coveting something that somebody else has. And as we'll see, Dan will find something to covet. Here we go. So, the Danites sought them an inheritance to dwell in because they didn't take what was theirs. In verse 2, the children of Dan sent of their family 5 men from their coast, men of valor from Zorah and from Eshtol, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said unto them, go search the land, who when they came to Mount Ephraim, to the house of Micah, they lodged there. Now, this wasn't God's will for them. They're not going on a journey and saying, hey, let's go see what the Lord wants us to have out there. This isn't God's will, you see. And does this sound familiar to you? Let's go spy out the land, they say there in verse 2. They're using godly terminology to do some kind of an ungodly thing. And they say, let's go spy out the land. Yeah, that's it. That's what Moses, you see, let us do. Let the children of Israel do. Let's go spy out the land to see, you see, what we can find there. And they end up in this place in Mount Ephraim where Micah lived. Our friend Micah from the previous chapter. Micah's there. And when they were by the house, this is interesting, they're in the neighborhood of Micah. They're just in the neighborhood. And they walk by the house of Micah. And when they did, they knew the voice of the young man, the Levite. Amazing. They're just walking by the house. They're in the neighborhood and they hear this Levite speaking, and they know that he's a Levite, or they know that he's not from Mount Ephraim at least. Why? Well, if you recall, a few chapters ago, when the Ephraimites, when they wouldn't help out, remember? And they came and claimed that they needed to, remember Jephthah? Remember they came and said, hey, you went on and did this battle and took on the enemy without us, and we're mad now, we're going to burn you. And all. Remember that? Do you remember the test that was given to the Ephraimites when they were on the run, running away from Israel at that point? Remember? They stopped them and they said, hey, we need you to say something for us. Do you remember? Remember? Say Shibboleth. Remember? Shibboleth. Go ahead and say that. And the men of Ephraim would say, Shibboleth. Remember? Because they were silly. No, because they couldn't say Shibboleth. It just couldn't be pronounced by them. It was, you know, it's kind of like an Oriental person saying fried rice. You know, it's fried lice. You know, they can't do it. It's just one of those things they can't pronounce. And so he said, hey, say Shibboleth. And they said, Shibboleth. And he said, oh, you're an Ephraimite. So guess what? The Levites in Mount Ephraim. And as he's speaking, he sounds different than the rest of the people of Ephraim. And they pick it up. Amazing. They walk by and go, hey, he's from our hometown. Right? So, watch what happens. They hear the voice of the young man. They knew, you see, who it was. They knew at least he was a homeboy, you might say. And they turned in thither and said unto him, who brought thee hither? And what makest thou in this place? And what hast thou here? They ask, they know he's a Levite. Listen, they know he's a Levite. And they ask, what are you doing here? Well, that's a good question, isn't it? These guys from the tribe of Dan, they realize, hey, you're a Levite. What in the world are you doing here in Mount Ephraim, away from one of the cities that you should have been assigned to? What are you doing here? What have you to do with this place? And the man, the young Levite, verse 4, says unto them, thus and thus dealeth Micah with me. He tells them, Micah hired me. This man Micah hired me, he says, and I am his priest. Notice that. I am his priest. He's not even God's priest anymore. He's not even associated with the Lord anymore. He's just Micah's priest. I'm his priest. He's lost completely the touch that he had from the Lord. He just doesn't have it. He's given up. He's turned his back. He's walked away. He's not in tune anymore. He's Micah's priest. He's not the Lord's. Amazing. Now, watch this, though. This is how far afield, again, the people of Israel, even the tribe of Dan, as we'll see, have gotten. They've just gone crazy. Because watch what they say. Verse 5, they said unto him, well, ask counsel, we pray thee, of God, that we may know whether our way which we go shall be prosperous. So these guys ask him, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be a Levite? He says, I got hired by this guy. I'm his priest now. Oh, they say. Well, while you're at it, ask God what we're supposed to do. Now, he just got through saying he's not God's priest at all. He's Micah's priest. And what's interesting to me is they ask him to ask counsel of God. But watch what happens. Verse 6, and the priest said unto them, go in peace. He didn't ask counsel of God at all. He didn't stop and say, okay, let me go pray for a while. Give me some time. He just says, oh, go ahead and go in peace. It's okay. In other words, he didn't take counsel with God and just tells him what he thinks, you see. And so he says, go in peace before the Lord is your way wherein you go. In other words, God will be with you. Go ahead and go. Man. Now, the question is, in Dan's tribe here, where's the elders at? Where's the leadership at? Wouldn't you think that statement alone that he's Micah's priest now should have raised the hairs on the back of their neck, and they would take this guy and say, listen, what are you doing? You've turned your back on the Lord. But they didn't. They were so far gone that they asked him to tell them what to do. Amazing. All this is the result of one tragic thing that is continuing to take place today, and that is nobody was following the word of God. Micah made his own ephod. He made his own little house of gods. He got his own little priest. He had his own little way. You know, his Burger King mentality. Have it your way. That's the way the people were living. It's just anything you want, you do. And this is what was going on. And the tribe of Dan was falling into the same pattern. And they didn't even call him on this. And nobody questioned it. And it's because nobody was following the word. Today's the same. When nobody follows the word, that's exactly what happens. And people wonder, what's going on in the world? Why is it such a mess? I can tell you why. Everybody's doing what's right in their own sight. There is no God for these people. They're their own God. They have their own religion. They have their own way. They have their own practices. And so here's the result, you see. But the elders, they weren't in tune either, you know. The leadership wasn't in tune. And don't you find that that's true, even today? I don't want to belabor this, but I've known men that have been leadership guys, deacons, elders in churches, and they've come here, several times before. I've ran into two or three different guys, and it's amazing to me that most of the time when they first visit this church, they don't show up with a Bible, first of all. No Bible in their hand. And sometimes they'll ask, oh, do we need our Bible? It's a Bible study. So we're going to study the Bible, see. And not that it's, again, not that I understand why they say it, because typically they don't need it. And that's a sad thing. But I have also talked to these guys who are, again, guys in leadership. I'm so-and-so from such-and-such a church, and I'm a deacon or I'm an elder. And as we're studying the word, they might come back again, you know, and bring their Bible. But I've had a man come up to me who was a guy in leadership at a church, and we were studying at that time. This was years ago. We were studying that time in Galatians, I think. And he came up and he said, could you show me where that's at in my Bible so I can follow along? You know, and I felt like what Jesus said to Nicodemus, are you a ruler of the people and you don't know these things? You don't know where to find a book in your Bible, you see? Where is the leadership? And you can find out where the people are very quickly. Where are they? What are they doing? Are they in tune with the Lord? These guys weren't. They didn't have any leadership. And the five men, verse 7, departed after this Levite told them that they'd be blessed. This guy really is a hireling, you know. Just ask him, how are we going to do? Great, you're going to do awesome. Go ahead and do it. You're going to do great. And they just buy it, you know. And so five men departed and came to Laish, which is about 30 miles from the Mediterranean, eastward from the Mediterranean. Nice area up there in the northern part of Israel. And saw the people that were therein, how they dwelt careless or carefree, if you would. They came across a people in Laish, which were kind of carefree people. In other words, kind of footloose and fancy free, these people were. And it says, after the manner of the Zidonians. In other words, they were either part of the Zidonian group of people that was in that area that had kind of moved away and got off on their own. or they were related to them. They were quiet and secure. In other words, they thought everything was just hunky-dory where they were in the life that they had. They didn't seem to have any problems from the onset, from the way it looked on the outside. And there was no magistrate in the land that might put to them shame in anything. So in other words, there was no law. There's no authority. And they were far from the Zidonians, so they were far from their people and had no business with any man. They were out there on their own. These people were. They seemed to have a false sense of security, like everything's fine. We don't have any authority. We have nothing to be accountable to or anybody to be accountable to. We're just out there on our own and everything's fine. Do you ever talk to people like that? No. We're fine. Thank you. Do you know the Lord? No, but we're okay. Thanks anyway. You know, we're doing great. Thank you. You see. And that is a false sense of security, isn't it? As we'll see, those people are going to, at some point, going to face a tragedy. They're going to face something very difficult. And their false sense of security is going to fall apart very quickly. So, they had no business with any man. They didn't associate with any outsiders. And they came unto their brethren, to Zorah and Eshtol. That is, these men from the tribe of Dan. And their brethren, and said unto them, what say ye? And they said, arise, that we may go up against them, for we have seen the land. So the five guys go check out these people and come back and say, hey, we've seen the land. Well, this is sounding kind of familiar. They went and spied out the land and came back and said, hey, we've spied it out. We checked it out. For we've seen the land, and behold, it is very good. The land is good. And are you still, or in other words, are you just sitting there? They say to the rest of these people, be not slothful, watch this, to go and to enter in and possess the land. Now, is that a familiar tune or what? Who told them that? God did. When? Oh, earlier on, remember, the whole book of Joshua, get in there. Go get what your inheritance is. Go get what I've given you, the Lord kept saying to them. Remember? Are you slothful? How long are you going to be slothful, the Lord said, to go in and possess the land? How long are you going to wait around and just kind of sit there instead of going in and getting what you've been promised, right? So they're saying this to their people. But here's the problem, folks. It's too little, too late. They gave up what they had been given. They didn't inherit. They didn't go in and possess. So now they're using the same language that God used on them. But they're going to try and accomplish their own will, their own purpose. Do you ever do that? Put a little godly tag on your own will? Oh, the Lord will bless this. Well, have you sought him out? Well, I just know. I know he's going to. He really wants me to do this. Really? Does he? Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure of it. You know, in fact, I heard from the Lord. People say, you did? How did you hear from him? Well, I just, you know, just a little still small voice. Those still small voices can be you. You can take a little megaphone and wrap it around your own ear and go, it's time to go. Go ahead and do that. See, yeah, you have to be careful. And the reason you have to be careful is because whatever the Lord's going to tell you to do is going to be something that his word would not only confirm and back up, but he's probably already told you something to do oftentimes. And you already know what that is. And I sometimes that's not the case. I'm not going to say that's always the case. But I have found in my life, and I've talked to many of you, and many times you already know what to do. We already know what to do. And the question isn't, oh, I don't know. Sometimes the question is not, I don't know. It's, I won't go, or I won't do it, and I want to do something else. And therefore, I'm going to convince myself that God's telling me to do this. Careful with that. Careful, because these guys were using godly language to accomplish some kind of an ungodly thing. And so, these five tell the people, hey, you know, what are you going to do? Get up, let's go possess the land. And he says there, when you go, you shall come unto a people secure and to a large land, for God hath given it into your hands. Did he? Is this their land? No, it's not their land. A place where there is no want of anything that is in the earth. Notice that. There's nothing in the earth that you would want after you see this land. In other words, this has got it all. This is the worldly package right here. Everything you'd ever want in the world is here. And that's the temptation that lures so many people into deceiving themselves into thinking that it's God's will when it's really theirs. And the temptation is, it's worldly. It's something of the world. Everything on earth you'd ever want is here, they were saying. Was that really the case, though? It was a good land. It's a pretty place. Another guy made that mistake, if you recall, back in the book of Genesis. The nephew of Abraham, Lot. He saw the goodly land that was near Sodom. Remember? And he chose that land because Abraham told him, you pick the land. Our guys, our employees, so to speak, our shepherds and all the guys that tend our flocks, they're not getting along. So Lot, you go ahead and choose the land you want. And Lot said, thanks, uncle. And he took the best land that was best for cattle and all the rest, right? The best for making money. And it just happened to be really close to Sodom. And Lot took that land and eventually moved a little bit closer to Sodom. And after a while, he moved right to the very border because it was more convenient. And then, before long, he's moved right on in. And then by the end of his life, or the end of his life in Sodom, he's sitting in the gate or the city council. He was a councilman in Sodom. And this particular temptation was the same as Lot's. The worldliness is good. It's full of worldliness. I want that. And there they go, you see. So verse 11 says, and there went from thence of the family of the Danites out of Zorah and out of Eshtol 600 men appointed with weapons of war. And they went up and pitched at Kirjath Jearim in Judah. Wherefore they called that place Mahadadan unto this day. Behold, is behind Kirjath Jearim. And they passed thence unto Mount Ephraim and came unto the house of Micah. So now the 600 have returned. The five guys that went to spy out the land have gone and checked it out. They've gone back to the group, and 600 men now have come along with the five spies. You follow? So they've gone back, and they've come back now. Now they're back at the house of Micah again. And so as they're there in Ephraim, they came to the house of Micah, and then answered the five men that went to spy out the country of Laish, and said unto their brethren, these 600, he says, do you know that there is in these houses an ephod and a teraphim and a graven image and a molten image? Now therefore consider what you have to do. So the five spies says, hey, guys, don't you know that there's an ephod here? And a teraphim and graven images and molten images, you know what we need to do. They're valuable. Remember, one of the graven images was made out of 200 shekels of silver. Remember? That Micah had stolen from his mom and then gave back. Now keep in mind, just keep this in mind, the value of the 1,100 shekels of silver that he stole from his mom. It wasn't just like her purse. He didn't just, you know, take money out of her purse like some little kids try and do with their mommies. 1,100 shekels of silver. Let me put this in perspective. 10 shekels of silver was an annual income for a man. 10. So this is 1,100 shekels of silver. So in other words, it's a lot of money. It's her life savings. 200 shekels of silver to make a graven image would have been a fortune. And that's why these guys are saying that. It's not like, oh, let's just go grab that little statuette, you know, because it might be worth something. They know what it's worth. It's worth a fortune. That's worth a lot of money, you see. And they say, you know what we have to do. And they turned thitherward and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, even unto the house of Micah, and saluted him. And the 600 men appointed with their weapons of war, which were of the children of Dan, stood by the entering into the gate. So there they are at the gate of the house of Micah in that town where Micah lived in Ephraim. And the 5 men that went to spy out the land went up and came in thither and took the teraphim and the molten image. And the priest stood in the entering into the gate with the 600 men that were appointed with weapons of war. So the priest is being distracted by the 600 men as they're standing there by the gate. The 5 men, the 5 spies, run into the house of Micah and they steal his stuff. They take the stuff out, see, while Micah's out there. And and so it says there, the 5 men went in and took those things while Micah stood out. In verse 18, these went into Micah's house and fetched the carved image and the ephod and the teraphim and the molten image. Then, watch this, said the priest unto them, what do you, or what are you doing? He sees them taking the stuff. And they said unto him, hold thy peace, lay thy hand upon thy mouth. In other words, put a lid on it, they said to him. Hush your mouth, cover your mouth. Don't you say a thing. So the priest here, who's trying to have a little loyalty for Micah, of course, because he's his priest, right? And here goes all these little gods, all these little idols, this phony ephod, all this stuff. And guess who got to use all that stuff? The priest. He was Micah's little priest, right? So these guys are stealing it, and he says, hey, what are you doing? They say, hey, keep quiet. You just keep your mouth shut, they said. And watch what they say. This is great. They said, hold thy peace, you see. Lay thy hand upon thy mouth and go with us and be to us a father and a priest. Isn't it better for thee to be a priest unto to a whole tribe of people rather than one man? They said, is it better for you to be one man's priest, or how about a whole tribe? Now, this is a true hireling. This guy is a career minister. Because the first thing he hears is, hey, is it really good enough for you to just be one man's priest? Or wouldn't it be better for you to be the priest of all of us? Be our father and our priest, they said. And the priest's heart was glad, it says, verse 20. And he took the ephod and the teraphim and the graven image and went in the midst of the people. He took the offer, just like that. Got a better offer. Got a bigger ministry. He's thinking, you see, about the radio ministry and the TV ministry and the stadiums that are going to be packed. And boy, it's tempting. And he jumps on it. He jumps in with both feet. He doesn't even think twice. I mean, when he sees the ephod and all the graven images, all this money, in other words, all this stuff that was worth a fortune, when he sees it being taken away, he says, whoa, wait a minute. What are you guys doing? And they say, hey, be quiet. Come with us. You can be our priest. Oh, okay. If you put it that way. And he jumps on the bandwagon, you see. Amazing. So, we're going to move quickly here. They turned and departed and put the little ones and the cattle and the carriage before them. And the reason they did that is because it was the safest place. The enemy tended to attack from the rear, not the front. So the children and the women were up front. And that was so when they traveled, not when they went into battle, but when they traveled, that was usually the case. So when they were a good way from the house of Micah, the men that were in the houses near to Micah's house were gathered together and overtook the children of Dan. And they cried unto the children of Dan, and they turned their faces and said unto Micah, what aileth thee that thou comest with such a company? What's wrong with you? What's the problem? He said. And he says, Micah says, you have taken away my gods. He's chasing after him to get his gods back. Amazing. And he says, you've taken away my gods, which I made. I made those gods. What do you think you're doing taking my gods away? And the priest that is my priest. I mean, you got my gods, you got my priest. And you are gone away. And what have I more? In other words, I don't have anything left. You've taken away my gods and my priests. I don't have anything left. And what is this that you say unto me? What aileth thee? In other words, you're asking me what's the matter with me when you took away my gods and my priests? Isn't this interesting? Isn't it interesting? A man runs after somebody because they stole his gods and his priest. Idolaters, folks, worship gods they can carry. They carry them in their pocket. They carry them here and there. They carry their gods. Isn't it amazing that they don't understand how puny their gods are when you can carry them? Whereas Christians, we serve a God who carries us. Big difference. Which would you rather have? A God you can carry? Or get carried away by somebody else, like these gods are getting carried away? Or would you rather serve a God that carries you? Picks you up, carries you on his big shoulders, see? It's an interesting thing. So he says, I don't have anything else, and you're asking me what's wrong with me? And the children of Dan said unto him, let not thy voice be heard among us. In other words, don't say another thing. We don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear from you. And he says, lest angry fellows run upon thee, and thou lose thy life with the lives of thy household. So the tribe of Dan here, these men, turn back to Micah and say, we don't want to hear it. And you better just keep quiet about it, or you'll lose your life. Some angry fellows will run upon you and your household. This is what the result, by the way, guys, of serving false gods brings. This is what happens. There. Remember, there's no protection. Remember, there's no safety in serving a false god. Satan is totally behind that because he knows there is no safety for you. There is no final taking care of your soul or your life when that's the case. And this is the end result. The enemy just turns and says, you're going to die. You don't have anything, you see. And Dan is being used here, in a sense, as that voice. Because his motivation, the tribe of Dan here, his motivation is no different, as we'll see, than Micah's. He's just taking it by force. He's just overruling, you see. And the children of Dan, verse 26, went their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back into his house. And they took, verse 27, the things which Micah had made, and the priest which he had, and came unto Laish, unto a people that were a quiet and secure, and they smote them with the edge of the sword. This group of people that were there in Laish, that were just minding their own business. Now, these people aren't the children of Israel, but they aren't people that God commanded the children of Israel to wipe out. Remember, they had certain people that they were to leave alone. People that were far away and not a threat, they weren't to go after them. They were to drive out the inhabitants of the territory that the children of Israel were to inhabit. But those were Canaanites and Perizzites and Hittites and Amorites and all those ites that the people of Israel would find to be enemies. These people, Zidonians, minding their own business, this wasn't right. This wasn't of God. And people say, well, what's the difference? I mean, man, God tells them to wipe out these people, but these people, he doesn't tell them to wipe out. What's the big deal? What's the difference? The difference is God knows who is to be wiped out and who isn't. Man doesn't. Man has no right to do that. Man doesn't have a right. We've seen it in our lifetimes, some of us. And we will probably see more of that kind of thing take place, I'm afraid. The reason that the horrific things that happen in this world take place is because of this same heart that Dan is showing. I decide who gets wiped out. Every huge issue that takes place in this world is because of this. Man wants something that's not his, and pursuing to take it destroys life, you see. Adolf Hitler, obviously, what a horrific thing that took place because this guy decided that these people, the Jews, needed to be wiped out, right? They needed to be exterminated. What a terrible thing. And we would all look at him and say, he didn't have the right to decide who gets wiped out. I mean, we'd all agree. But here's the thing. What Dan is doing here, the tribe of Dan is doing the same type of thing. They didn't have the right to decide that these people shouldn't be living. They didn't have this right. God didn't tell them that this was a people that was going to tear them down and destroy their life and destroy everything in their life. So they decide to do this on their own, and it's terrible. And watch this now. There was no deliverer, verse 28, because it was far from Zidon, and they had no business with any man, and it was in the valley that lieth by Beth Rehob, and they built a city and dwelt therein. So there was no deliverer for these people because they were afar off. They were far away, and therefore there was nobody to deliver them from the tribe of Dan. Now, this is a kind of a key, isn't it? For those that are afar off, who have this false sense of security, who have this sense that, hey, we're okay out here. We don't need anything. We don't need anybody. We don't need anything to do with you guys or you guys. We're okay. There's a problem with that mentality, whether it's a worldly person or whether it's a believer, folks. In this particular case, these weren't the children of Israel. These weren't believers, but they thought that they were okay. They didn't need anything. They had this security that was false. And when the enemy comes or somebody comes or danger comes, what happens is there's no one to deliver them. The reason that the book of Judges is so important is because it's about the deliverer. It's about the deliverer. Jesus Christ, the deliverer, the one that delivers lives, the one that delivers from the pit of hell. And here, these people had no deliverer, it says, because they were far off. They were far from Zidon. They had no business with any man, you see. And so Dan wipes them out and then builds a city and dwelt there. So in other words, they destroy the place and they rebuild it, you see. It's amazing what greed does to people. What the Bible calls filthy lucre does to people. I like that terminology. Filthy lucre, you know. It sounds like a you know, one of those villains in a movie. Doesn't it? Be a great villain in Spider-Man. Who is that? That's Filthy Lucre. But filthy lucre, this idea that I have to have more, I have to have something else, I have to have something more than what God has already given to me, and I didn't take that, or that wasn't what I really wanted, or not what I really thought was the best thing, so I'm doing my own thing and I'm taking whatever I want. That greed really does breed all kinds of misery, doesn't it? Someone once said, you know, and I think it's true, you know, that you know, people spend money that they don't have to buy things they don't need, to impress people who don't care. People don't care about your stuff. I mean, you think they do. We think that it's really important that we have what we have because, after all, everybody cares. I got news for you. No, they don't. Nobody cares what you have. I know. I think the same thing sometimes. I'm going to buy that shirt. You know, it's everybody's going to care that I have it. And nobody does. I mean, I'm always amazed. Doesn't anybody care? And it's crazy because, you know, really nobody does care. And really, when you come down to it, this is the killer of that whole thing, is that you don't really care if they care or not. You don't even like the people you're trying to impress. In fact, most of them you don't even know. And you don't want to know them. So it's really crazy, isn't it? I'm going to spend money that I really can't afford to spend on things that I don't need. And I'll tell you, folks, I don't care who you are in here. There's just a lot of things you don't need. And then again, to impress people who could care less. It's really true. And these people were convinced, Dan, this tribe of Dan was convinced that if they just had that land that these poor people had, that would be it for them. And here's what happened, to finish up. Here's what happened. And this is the end result for people who live this way, who seek after the riches of this world, who seek after the worldly stuff. What happened to these guys is the same thing. They called the name of the city Dan. What a surprise. After the name of Dan, their father, who was born unto Israel. Howbeit, the name of the city was Laish at the first. Well, they destroyed that city and then rebuilt it and named it after themselves. And the children of Dan set up the graven image. They took that graven image, remember? Did you think they were just going to take it to destroy it? That would have been the right thing to do, wouldn't it? Like Gideon, tear down the high places, the groves and the altars, and destroy those graven images and all that junk. God said, take it down, get it out of here, worship me alone. But these guys, they took that graven image and they set it up. They put it up on an altar. And Jonathan, which now we learn the name of the Levite priest, that young Levite priest, his name's Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh. He and his sons were priests to the tribe of Dan until the day of the captivity of the land. Listen, this tribe of Dan, when the captivity took place, if you know your Bible history, you know that the Syrians swept down from the north and took the 10 tribes of Israel. Remember? They took them captive. Where? Into Babylon, right? Did you know that the first group of people in Israel, the first of the tribes to be given over to idolatry and to turn other people away, was the tribe of Dan? The first group. And this is an amazing statement that Jonathan, this Levite, and his sons became the priests to the tribe of Dan as they set up the graven image. How could this be, we think? How in the world could a Levite priest set up a graven image and serve the tribe of Dan, leading them into idolatry, leading them into false religion? But what it led to, of course, was a day of captivity. They did that until they were captive They did that until the enemy swooped down and took them captive. It's always that way, isn't it? It's always that way. I'll pursue this. I'll go after that. I'll be involved with this other thing. And if I do, listen carefully, I will be captive. I will be in bondage. I'll be taken by it. It's a trap, obviously. So what's the key there? Well, don't set up a graven image. Don't set up any kind of an image. Don't set up any kind of an idol. Don't set up those things, obviously. But here's the saddest part of the story for me. And it's at the very end. But this just kills me. It says in verse 31, they set them up Micah's graven image, which he made. And all the time that the house of God was in Shiloh. The house of God, the true place of worship, where the tabernacle was set up in Shiloh. All the while they did this, all the while the house of God was set up in Shiloh. There was true worship going on. There was true servanthood taking place in Shiloh. And what a shame. Shiloh, of course, you know, means the sent one. Shiloh is another name, actually, for Jesus. It's him, the sent one, the Messiah. And you see, all the while this was going on, it was all about Jesus in Shiloh. It was all about him. And all the while that the things are going on in this world, folks, all the while there's weird stuff happening. All the while there's junk going on. And there's false religion, and there's cultic behavior, and there's all kinds of weird, bizarre beliefs going on out there in the world. All the while, though, in Shiloh, it's all about Jesus, isn't it? And they could have had, this is the tragic thing, they could have had true worship. They could have had that true relationship with the Lord. They could have experienced all the joy and peace and rest and blessing. But instead, they had their image that they had to set up. Can you imagine? They had to set up their God. They had to prop it up there. And they had to carry it around when they moved it, you see. They had to carry their God. And they had to prop them up. They had to do all these things. And all the while, the true and living God was there in Shiloh, being worshipped by some. But you get the idea that here in the book of Judges, what's going on during the time of the judges is this kind of behavior. Now do you start to see what the judges were doing there? Why God had to raise them up? Do you see now why the ultimate picture of a judge, Jesus Christ, has to be raised up? And today, as much as any time I've ever seen in history, he certainly needs to be. The purpose, the role of the judges was to deliver the people. And today, how many folks are out there? How many people are out there in the world that are in that same boat? They're serving false gods. They've got their little things propped up here. They're worshiping this over there. And they need deliverance. Otherwise, folks, they are going to be taken captive. And that will be an eternal captivity, eternally. And that's, you know, some people say, well, you know, what are you trying to put a guilt trip on us? I mean, what are we supposed to do, you know? Well, we're supposed to be witnesses. Witnesses for Jesus in this world. We're supposed to be light in this world. We're supposed to have that effect on our society. And I know, listen, I know that for some, it's a huge issue. It's a big deal. It's something, you know, monumental to be in church. I know that. I know for some that is just, wow. You know, if you tell your relatives you go to church, you know, they just about fall over. But in here, listen, folks, in here, it's all about Jesus. That's true. In Shiloh, it's all about him. And here, it's all about him. And isn't it nice? Isn't it awesome to come in and say, yeah, it's all about Jesus here? It's nice, isn't it? It's awesome to say, we're here serving Jesus Christ. We don't serve graven images and molten images and all that. It's great in here that Jesus is all there is. But out there, what's going on out there? It has to be. It needs to be all about Jesus out there. The reason that society looks so bizarre is because so often this kind of reality is just running rampant. But the tribe of Dan was supposed to be the tribe of God's people. And they had all the godly lingo. They had all the stuff, you know, hey, go in and possess the land. What are you doing being lazy, right? They said all the right things. They knew what to say. They had that part down. But the problem was is it wasn't a reality for them. They just knew about God. But they were really into themselves. I don't know about you, and I'm not going to harp on this anymore. I'm done. But I don't know about you. But I'm sick of me. You're saying, we are too. It's about time you came up with that, because we're tired of you too. No. But I'm so tired of me. I'm so tired of me pursuing my own thing so often. I'm so tired of being selfish. I'm so tired of being self-centered. I'm so tired of caring, you see, about the stuff that doesn't matter. I'm so tired of that. And there's coming a day when, man, it's going to be over. And in Shiloh, it'll be all about Jesus. It'll be all about Him. Always. It'll never be about me. And people say, well, man, how could it be heaven? How could it be heaven if it's not about me? Isn't it all about me? And we laugh at that, but isn't that the truth? Isn't there just a thread of truth that runs through that in every one of us, that it's really about me and what I want? And I need to say this in the right heart, in the right way, because I don't want you to leave here, you know, feeling like I've come down on us. But here's the thing. There is nothing more important than Him. Whether we exercise that reality or not in our lives, there is no one, nothing more important than Jesus Christ. And in some ways, that's true in our lives, I know. But guys, this is something that I want you to pray about. And just maybe take it to the table tonight and say, Lord, I know this is true intellectually, and I know it, you know, in my heart. I know this is true, but I want it to be true in me. I don't want to just know it's true. I don't want to just know that it's supposed to be true. I want it to be true in me. I want it to be the reality for me. And for some, I think it's just a little oomph. It's a little step. It's a little push over the edge. And people are already thinking you're over the edge. I know that. You're thinking, man, we're already weird enough, Pastor Matt. I mean, people are already thinking we're bizarre. That's okay. Remember, you don't care what they think. You know. You're not trying to impress them, are you? Now, as we wrap this up, pray that in. Just pray, Lord, if this could be a reality in my life, even more, I'm with you. Because it is all about Jesus. It's all about you, Lord, and I want that to be really the case for me. And pray that in. Let's pray. Father, thank you for your word and the stories that we see. I pray tonight, Father, that as we come to the table and allow again the reality of Jesus to permeate this place, as we remember the blood and the body that Father was broken and the blood that was shed for me and for us, and realizing that there is nothing else that matters, that really counts in this life. And I'm praying for myself tonight too, Lord, and for all of us here, that we would take perhaps another step. Perhaps, Lord, just take another giant step and leave the mundane and mediocre behind, and truly just take and dive in to our Savior's Spirit and really be engulfed and entrenched with Jesus. Perhaps, as John the Baptist says, may we decrease a little more, that he might increase, that he would be magnified and enlarged in my life, in our life, in this church, in this community, in this place that we've been planted. We're here, Lord, and we know that you've given us something here. We don't need to run off. We don't need to go someplace to find something else. You've given us so much right here. May we take advantage of it. May we be motivated by your Spirit, not by what we might see and want. I pray that the table would be a place tonight, Father, of restoration. And we know forgiveness is there. You've paid for that long ago. But I pray tonight, Father, we would make confession of things that we've been perhaps sidetracked with and just take and lay them at your feet, and then really, truly, Father, just move forward and move into a place where perhaps we haven't been before, a depth and a walk that perhaps we've just never experienced. May it be so tonight. We thank you for your word. We praise you. And as we worship and take communion, may you just bless this place. Bless us all. In Jesus' name, amen.